Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's May 2021, and you're listening to episode 236, which is a conversation about Jehovah's Witnesses and the New World Translation. Today's guest is Ziggy Santini. He has a degree in religious studies and a PhD in mental health from the University of Barcelona. He lives in Denmark and conducts research at the Danish National Institute of Public Health. Ziggy has written an online exclusive feature article for the Christian Research Journal, and his article is called "Restoring the Divine Name in the New World Translation, A Strategy for Dialoguing with Jehovah's Witnesses." Our online exclusive articles are only available to subscribers, so to read his article, please subscribe to our magazine at equip.org. Ziggy, it's good to have you on.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Well, just as kind of a refresher, if not everybody is familiar with the backstory of the Jehovah's Witnesses, as I mentioned, Ziggy has written a paper for us talking about the New World Translation, and that's what we're going to be discussing today. But the New World Translation in particular is a translation of the Bible that was published by the Jehovah's Witnesses Watchtower Bible and Tract Society, is their full name. And that was done in 1961. And of course, they're called JWs for short. So that's what we'll be calling them. But they were founded by Charles Taze Russell, and they're a non-Trinitarian group, and they don't hold to the essentials of historic Orthodox Christianity. And one of their particular core beliefs is that Jesus is Michael the Archangel, and he's the highest created being. And so that's of interest because sometimes Christians who are not familiar with the Jehovah's Witnesses will come across one of their Bibles when they talk to someone who is a JW, and they will see that some of the verses are not the same as they have seen in their own Bible. This is why we're going to be talking about that. So just so you know, they have their own translation of the Bible. So just as kind of the introduction that I just gave, you know, why should people engage with the doctrines of the JWs and particularly engage with the New World Translation, which they will show you? I don't know how many people, just before we started this podcast, I was asking Ziggy, because he lives in a different country, if he still comes in contact with JWs. So some of us might have had them come knocking at our door.
Yeah, well, I mean, so the thing is that, of course, there might be a chance that you can live a whole entire lifetime without running into them. But that's certainly not the case for me. I have met them on several occasions at different stages in my life. And they're definitely prevalent here in Denmark. I wouldn't say that there's a lot of them, but regularly they are on the train stations and they're giving out their booklets and so forth, waiting for people to stop by, and maybe there's a lonely person there who's interested in learning something. And I have met them also in various different countries, going from New Zealand to Denmark and different places in Europe, and also in the US and in England. So, I mean, I've run into them, and any believer can really run into them. And then I'm thinking that it's very important to equip believers for the time that might come when they'll run into them, or when they come knocking on your door. And well, the thing is that this is there's actually nothing new about these the Jehovah's Witnesses. It's a type of heresy what they believe in, and it's an ancient heresy actually. It goes all the way back to Arius. It's called Arianism what they believe in, not to be confused with the whole Nazi ideology with Arians, but Arianism after Arius, who lived in the year 300. And they also believed that Jesus Christ, the Son, he was inferior to God the Father. And that is definitely not, obviously, what Orthodox Christians believe in. And this is such an essential doctrine. And obviously, the whole definition of heresy is when a doctrine, it goes so far away from the essential doctrine that it sort of like perverts the faith. It becomes something that is very different. And we are instructed in the Bible to defend the faith. So Christians that are practicing Christians, they need to be aware of these things. They need to be aware of these doctrines that are out there, is at least especially for these very common sort of heresies and sects that are out there. They need to be aware of what's going on there, because otherwise it's possible that one could be manipulated by these doctrines that they have. And something that I'm also, well, a reason that I'm particularly focused on this is, first off, that I would like to avoid that regular Christians, they get deceived and manipulated into these sects. And it's also that these sects, they basically, they ruin families. A sectarian group is not something that's healthy. And it's not a great experience for people that are in a sectarian group. And maybe by the grace of God, it would be possible for a believer to help a person to come out of that sect. So when they come knocking, maybe there's hope. I had many conversations with them, and it's definitely not easy to help them out of that group. But if there's chance, then I think it matters. So, and then the thing is that I'm trying to provide some method for doing this. And the typical approach and a trap that I fell into myself is really just that, let's say that Jehovah's Witnesses, they come and knock on your door, and then they want to talk about the Bible. And then you bring your own Bible. And we're assuming that this person, the believer, is aware of their doctrines and so forth. And what often happens is that, well, they're both equally persuaded about their side. And then they start showing Bible verses that is in favor of their own doctrine. And then after they did that, the first person does that, and then the next person shows another verse that sort of equally tends to, or would appear to, favor their side of the doctrine. And this is what we call a Bible ping pong, and where you just continuously sort of try to overwhelm the other person with verses that is in favor of your own doctrine. And this can really go on forever and ever and ever without end. It can be very exhausting. So what I'm trying to do with this article is simply to try to provide something that can sort of circumvent this typical trap.
I was mentioning earlier that this group was founded by Charles Taze Russell, and it was actually founded back in the 1870s. So it's been almost 150 years. They're not that large of a group. It's like maybe a little bit over 8.5 million people worldwide are JWs, but it seems like they're quite active and they're very devout to their particular doctrines. And so they are active in trying to convert people to their particular theology. And so, like you said, you were talking about this Bible ping pong. And do you think it's a risk for Christians to engage with JWs? Because especially if you're not familiar with the New World Translation, it can be very confusing or even frustrating.
Yes, definitely. And there is a risk, but, well, for starters, let's say there's a risk just being a Christian, because there will always be someone out there, religious or not, who's going to challenge Christians' beliefs. Yeah. So that's a risk in itself of just being in the world. But then the thing about being a Christian and standing in front of these Jehovah's Witnesses is that they might feel intimidated, because Jehovah's Witnesses are thoroughly trained to challenge Trinitarians, as they call us. They are thoroughly challenged to ask questions and to challenge the essential doctrines that Orthodox Christians have. And they learned this in their congregations and in their camps and whatever they got going. They are learning how to do this because they are targeting Christians, or people that are part of a Christian denomination but are not very, very grounded, very familiar with how that the Christian Orthodox Church or Orthodox Christians, mainstream Christians, have come to these essential doctrines. They are targeting people that are not aware of the scriptural basis for these doctrines that mainstream Christians believe in. So they're trained to do that, and that can be intimidating when you stand in front of them and they are asking questions. And what's important to know is that Although Jehovah's Witnesses might appear as being very knowledgeable of the Bible, what is in fact the case is that they spend most of their times reading Watchtower magazines, because this is one of the main features of a sect, of a religious sect. It is devotion or undying loyalty, not to the Bible, but to the teachings of a person or an organization. And they are completely loyal to this organization, the Watchtower organization, and their teachings, which means that their teachings, they take precedence, they take a priority over the Bible itself. They would never admit this, but that is in fact the case, because the teachings of the Watchtower organization is not something that can be questioned. It is something that becomes truth. It is truth for them. And that determines everything that's going on in the group and how they understand their faith and how to practice it. It cannot be questioned. Their teachings cannot be questioned. But either way, so they spend most of their times reading these Watchtower magazines. And I think that's important to know for a person who's a practicing Christian, because, well, exactly because of the reason that they might appear to be very knowledgeable, but actually what they're knowledgeable of is what they have learned and read in these Watchtower magazines. When it comes to the actual Bible and knowing about the Bible, they know very little. And that's exactly because the Watchtower organization actually discourages, it's not encouraging that they are learning about the fundamental, like the Bible, and learning how to translate it, and learning Greek and Hebrew and so forth, because they know that if they were to do that, there would be a risk that they would realize that some of the ways that they have translated their New World Translation is simply erroneous, incorrect, manipulated, and that will be a problem. So the best thing for them to do is really to encourage them to just read as many Watchtower magazines as they can. And then they sort of learn to parrot or to repeat whatever they heard from these magazines and these instructions in terms of how to challenge Orthodox doctrines. And that's what they bring to the door when they come knocking. And the point is that if a Christian person is well equipped in the Bible itself, and a proper biblical translation, then that mainstream Christian person is actually in an advantage. And that's also what I'm trying to provide. So in the end, my point is that, yes, there can be a risk because they can be intimidating, and they are also deceitful in their ways of challenging Christians in the ways that they do it. But if a person is equipped in the right way, then it can actually strengthen a person's faith. I think, and that's exactly what happened to me, honestly, because I had heard a lot of negative things about the Jehovah's Witnesses as I grew up. I knew they were a sect and so forth. I didn't know exactly what it meant to be in a sect, but I knew it was bad. And I knew that I wouldn't like to be part of that group. And then later on, as I became very involved in the Christian faith and practicing, then I met some of these people. And they would, just as I said, like they would challenge some of the doctrines, they would challenge me and the way I believed. And that was intimidating for me. Actually, I felt a certain amount of fear. I had a fear that they might be correct. I had a fear that they might be correct. And I remember experiencing this for a time. And it bothered me because I felt that, well, the Bible is about truth. Our faith is about truth. And I had to sort of face the possibility that, well, what if they are true? What if they're saying is true? Well, then I need to know. Yeah. Because the Bible talks about truth, and that, I mean, the Bible is truth. The God is truth according to the Bible. So truth is really fundamental. The way Jesus talks about truth is everything. So that also means that I cannot just tell myself, well, what I believe in is good enough, and then I will disregard what they say. No, I need to investigate and figure it out, because they come with some very heavy claims, some very intense claims. And I need to know, are they saying the truth or not? So I started investigating this. I looked into how to translate the Bible, how to do this, how do they come to these conclusions about their doctrines, and how do we arrive at our essential doctrines, and then figure that out. And I said to myself, I need to just know the truth, and then I'll go with wherever that takes me. And if I end up figuring out that Jehovah's Witnesses, they are actually telling the truth, well, then I guess there's nothing else for me than I have to become a Jehovah's Witness. Fortunately, that's not what happened. Fortunately, what happened is that I actually learned a heck of a lot about the Bible and how it's translated. And that strengthened me because, well, ever since then, I have never felt that fear that they might be right, because I know that they're not correct. They are deceitful, they're manipulative, and they're using a Bible that is, at very best, a poor translation. And at the very worst, it's directly manipulated, which I believe is the case.
You are listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. This is episode 236 about Jehovah's Witnesses and the New World Translation. We're speaking with Ziggy Santini about his online exclusive feature article for the Christian Research Journal. It's called Restoring the Divine Name in the New World Translation, a strategy for dialoguing with Jehovah's Witnesses. And we'd love for you to be able to read this article. If you're a subscriber, you can do so. If you'd like to subscribe to read his article, please go to our website, equip.org. A subscription is $33.50. And another way we'd like to ask you to help us out is, most importantly, we'd like you to rate or review our podcast. Do that at Apple Podcasts, because really, I think that's the best way that ratings are kind of logged online for these podcasts. And a starred review is really quick, or a really short review about why you like to listen to our content would be great. And that would really help us out. Another way to help us out is simply just tell friends about this podcast. Tell people on social media when you link this podcast on your social media feeds, any of the episodes that you're favorite or this one. And also another way to help us, if you don't have $33.50 in your budget to subscribe right now, and that would be to give us a tip. And you can do that at our website, equip.org, by going to magazine and the drop-down menu of Postmodern Realities Podcast. It takes you to landing page where all the episodes are housed, and you can click any of those, and there's a link there where you could give us a tip. And we really appreciate all the ways in which you help us out. But really, the best way you can help us out is give us that rating or review. And I know tons of people listening, but not very many reviews. So I would really love it if you could help us out and just quickly give us a review on Apple Podcasts. That would mean so much to us. Thank you. Well, I just want to move on specifically to the crux of your article, which is discussing the New World Translation. So why is it necessary for Christians to know about the New World Translation? It's not like a lot of us necessarily come in contact with JWs. And specifically, how is it different from mainstream Bible translations that we might be more familiar with, like the NIV or the ESV or some of the other translations?
Yeah. Well, there's a saying that you have to know your enemy. So I don't want to say that Jehovah's Witnesses are your enemy, but I would like to say that it's important to know what they know, because otherwise there's a gap, and it's going to be difficult to sort of figure out why they believe as they do and how they believe. And yes, the Jehovah's Witnesses, they have their own translation of the Bible. And actually, I want to say that, well, this is also often a common feature for a sect, is just very basically that they have their own version of the Bible. Now, I'm not saying that it has to be like that, but I would say in general, if you run into a group, and there are several groups out there that has this feature, if you run into a group and they have their own version of the Bible, you run. Because you got to wonder, why would they have their own version of the Bible? And often there's a reason for it, and it's not a good reason. So I can't exclude the possibility that there might be some instances out there where they could have their own Bible, but in this case, and in several other cases, they have their own Bible, and it's because they're sect. They want to have their own Bible, and they want their own group to read their own Bible. So apart from that, it's really important to know about the New World Translation, because, and this is very important, mainstream Christians, they believe, as they do, in essential Christian doctrine, and they believe in the Trinity and so forth. If I was able to just erase my memory and what I know, and if I was given a New World Translation and I just read that, then I would arrive at the same conclusions as they have arrived at. I would arrive at the same doctrines as they have. That would be my understanding, because that is the way that the New World Translation is translated, in a way that favors the doctrines they have in the Watchtower organization among the Jehovah's Witnesses. When you translate the Bible the way they have done it, then you would end up arriving at the same conclusion. Yes, there's God the Father, and then there's the Son, and he is the Father's first created Son. And he is, by definition, inferior to God. That is what they believe, and that is what their Bible seems to confirm. That's why it's very important to know that there's a difference between a normal, reputable Bible translation and then the New World Translation. And then the thing is that if you're in dialogue with the Jehovah's Witnesses, and you're doing this Bible ping pong, and you're with your Bible and they're with their Bible, well, there's just no chance that you're going to make any impact on their beliefs if you are using a different Bible than they are, or vice versa, that they are using a different Bible than you. So my whole point in my article is that it's actually important to address the root of the problem, which is not just how we believe differently, but the source of how we believe differently, by looking at the actual translation. And you always want to keep in mind when talking to Jehovah's Witnesses is that they think that you are deceived. They believe that mainstream Christianity and these essential doctrines that we have of the Trinity in particular is an inherited misunderstanding, or even a heresy that we have inherited from the Catholic Church, a degraded Catholic system that just still persists. And they are completely convinced that you and I are deceived. Okay? Obviously, I know that because of having studied this, I know that they are deceived based on what the Watchtower organization has taught and how they have crafted their translation of the Bible. But then you simply have to address this, because otherwise you'll get nowhere with them. And the goal of my article is really to equip the believer when they dialogue with the Jehovah's Witnesses. Then my goal is for that person, the believer, the goal is for that person to get the Jehovah's Witnesses to a place where they will actually doubt their New World Translation. If you can do that by using this method that I'm introducing here, then I think you will have done a really good job in defending the faith, because that's what it's all about. It's all about truth, and truth matters.
So, how does, in particular, the New World Translation deal with the verses in the Bible where the JWs argue that the Tetragrammaton appeared? And first of all, you're going to have to define that for us and explain that to us, and then talk to us about how to deal with that.
Yeah, definitely. So in my article, I'm covering one aspect of the New World Translation. And there are many other aspects that are also important to know about, because there are many, many problems with the New World Translation. And some of them are just about the way that the verses have been translated and the grammar they have used to translate, in a way where it is translated away to hide the deity of Christ. Basically, that's what they're doing. And to give an example, in Hebrews, it talks about, the writer of Hebrews says, "Let all the angels of God worship him," referring to Christ. Now, obviously, in the Bible, only God deserves worship. And any reputable Bible version is going to say exactly that. Let all the angels of God worship him. But in the New World Translation, they write, "Let all the angels of God show obeisance to him, which means some kind of like salutation or some type of giving respect to a person. They have done that on purpose because obviously they cannot allow for the translation to say worship Christ because they believe that Christ is inferior. So they're using a different word. But what's interesting is that they don't use this rule consistently when it comes to this. Because if we go back to the Gospels where Jesus is being tempted by the devil in the desert, then Jesus says, in response to what the devil says, Jesus says, quoting from the Old Testament, you should worship the Lord God only and him alone. And that word he uses for worship in this verse is exactly the same as the word that the writer of Hebrews uses when he says, let all the angels of God worship him. It comes from the Greek proskuneo. So you gotta wonder, why would the writer of Hebrews so carelessly just use a word saying, let all the angels of God show obeisance to him? If that's what he really meant, why would he use that word that also means worship, that even Jesus Christ himself uses when he talks about worshiping God? And of course, they're not aware of this. They just think they're just reading that translation and they're thinking that these are two different words. They're thinking that in the gospel, Jesus says worship, and then in Hebrews, the writer, he says show obeisance, but actually it's the same Greek word, obviously, because it's using that word to worship. Okay, so this is one way that the New World Translation is different. That's in terms of how you translate. But what I'm covering in my article is something that is a little bit on a different level, because it's not just about how we translate words, but it's about how the New World Translation is even manipulating the words that are being translated from, not just to, but from. Okay, so, and it gets a little bit technical here, but bear with me. What is different about the New World Translation is that they believe, okay, so let's start over. You mentioned the tetragrammaton. And the tetragrammaton, that means from Greek, the four letters, okay? And that is the personal name of God, the divine name. So there's a title of God. If we go to the Old Testament, then God has a title, which is God, or Elohim in Hebrew. But then God also has a name, and that name is the four letters. And it's usually transliterated into YHWH. And generally, the understanding among scholars is that the most likely pronunciation of this would be Yahweh. So we're going to call it Yahweh for the time being. And this is what the Jehovah's Witnesses call Jehovah. The fact is that Jehovah, the name Jehovah, or the word Jehovah, is most likely an error. It's based on an error that goes back to the Middle Ages in a Latin version of the Bible, and it's most likely incorrect. And we know that because we have this word hallelujah from the Bible. And that word hallelujah actually has a part of the divine name at the end, namely Yah. So if it is Yah at the end, then most certainly the name, the personal name of God, must start with Yah, namely, so it becomes Yahweh, yeah, and not Jehovah. So, but that's just one thing. That's just the name itself, and it's not that important, but I think it's significant. But then what's important is that in the Old Testament, this letter appears, the four letters appears. This name of God, Yahweh, appears in the Old Testament frequently. And when you read a normal, reputable Bible translation of the Old Testament, then you will see the word Lord in these cases. And usually it's capitalized all the way through. So four capitalized letters, L-O-R-D. And that refers to that there was originally God's divine name in there, Yahweh. And so in Judaism, back then and even to this day, the Jews were very, very careful to not take God's name in vain, because it's part of the law. You should not take God's name in vain. So when they read up from the scriptures, they really did whatever they could to avoid saying, uttering the divine name, because the name itself was holy, was divine. So when they read up from the scriptures, then when they finally got to the Tetragrammaton, then instead of pronouncing the name, then they would just say Adonai, which means the Lord. All right. So this was the Old Testament. And then it was common also that they would speak Greek as well, especially during the time of Jesus. And some of the time before that, there would be a lot of Greek speaking, and a lot of Jews would also be speaking Greek. And sometime before Jesus, a lot of Jewish scribes, they translated the Hebrew Old Testament into Greek. And when they did that, then they didn't write the Tetragrammaton in the Greek, mainly because they probably wouldn't know how to do it. So instead, they just continued this tradition as if they read. And then when they wrote the Greek Old Testament scriptures, then when there was the Tetragrammaton, then they would write Kyrios, which is the equivalent of Adonai, which means the Lord. So all through the Greek translation of the Old Testament, you have Kyrios when there was the Tetragrammaton. So that's the Old Testament. This also continues in the New Testament. So in the New Testament, well, the New Testament was written in Greek. And that means that all the way through the New Testament, there is no Tetragrammaton, because it's written in Greek. And it would be very strange for anyone writing the scriptures in Greek to even use the Tetragrammaton, mainly because they are written in different ways. They're different letters. It's a different script. Yeah, they're two different scripts. And Greek is written from left to right, and Hebrew is written from right to left. So if you're writing in Greek from left to right, then it's very strange to suddenly write a Hebrew word going from right to left, and then continuing writing Greek from left to right. That's just, it's unnatural. It doesn't make any sense. So that's probably why no one would do that, and maybe for other reasons as well. So in the New Testament writers, they never used the Tetragrammaton. Not even when they would quote from the Old Testament, if they quoted a verse where the Tetragrammaton originally was, they would never use that. They would just use Kyrios, the Lord. So this goes all the way through the New Testament. What the Jehovah's Witnesses are claiming is that the Tetragrammaton in the New Testament was lost. It was lost. So it originally was there, but now it's lost. And they are claiming that because it was lost, then we have to restore the Tetragrammaton in the New World Translation. Well, how do you go about doing that? If it's lost and you don't know where the Tetragrammaton appeared, how can you then restore it? Well, that's what they're saying that they can do. And they're saying, first of all, well, if there was an Old Testament verse where it appeared, then it should also appear in the New Testament. And that's where they use Jehovah in the New Testament. And they're saying that if the Tetragrammaton appeared in the context of a verse they're quoting for, then it should also be there. So what you want to keep in mind with the New World Translation is that generally the New World Translation uses the titles Jehovah or God when it refers to the Father, and it uses the title the Lord to refer to the Son. Okay? So every time that a verse in the Bible is talking about the Son, well, then the New World Translation translates into the Lord. And then when a verse in the New Testament refers to the Father, then the New World Translation translates into Jehovah or God. All right? So you can already see that that would make a difference when you're reading, yeah, because it depends on who the verse is referring to. And what's really important to stress is that the Tetragrammaton never appeared in the manuscripts of the New Testament that we ever found. So at least there is simply no evidence that it was ever in the New Testament. And what they do always, the Jehovah's Witnesses, is that they try to persuade you about this because they say that there were some fragments that were found, some Greek fragments, where perhaps it could have looked like that the Tetragrammaton was in the Old Testament at some places, some Greek translations of the Old Testament. This is very, very weak evidence that does not appear to have been the norm whatsoever. And this was, again, this was in the Old Testament. But we have never uncovered any New Testament manuscripts that contain the Tetragrammaton, ever, period. And that's very important to stress to them. And they will continue to try to persuade you this is the case. It's not the case. So just get that really straight. There is no Tetragrammaton ever been uncovered in the New Testament.
So in your article, you are talking about using a specific method called this two-step approach. And just what is this method that we use to talk to JWs, first of all? And do you have to be someone, a Christian, that's familiar with the biblical languages? Because you talked to us about how, you know, there's the Greek in the New Testament and Hebrew in the Old Testament, and that could be intimidating to some Christians to think they'd need to be familiar with any kind of minutia regarding the original biblical languages. And then also, what would be the result of Christians using this two-step approach that you describe in your article?
Yeah, so the thing is that I think most of what is necessary to know I provide in the article I have written. Most of what you need to know is in there. And no, I don't think you really need to know Hebrew and Greek. I mean, I don't know Greek and Hebrew more than just very basic knowledge of how it works. But what I use is, I use this website called Bible Hub. It's a very normal Bible webpage where you can find different translations. And you can also use, there's Strong's Concordance in there and the dictionary. And then you can find the words and what they refer to. So you don't actually need to know the Greek or the Hebrew, but what's important is sometimes that you can find the roots, and then you can figure out what actually appeared in the original manuscripts that we have. So that can be useful. But here's the thing. I provide this two-step approach, and the two-step approach is really just to equip believers to talk and dialogue and challenge the New World Translation. So again, not challenge the doctrines that might be a product of it, and hopefully will be, but it's more to challenge the New World Translation itself. And what the two-step approach does is that it challenges this restoration rule that they claim. Because, again, they claim that they have restored the Tetragrammaton in the New Testament. The problem is that they're using this rule to restore it, but they're not using it consistently. And that's very, very important. So make sure you note this, that they're not using this restoration rule consistently. When you translate from the Bible, when you use a specific rule, you have to use that rule consistently. Otherwise, you're not doing a good job. Otherwise, it's unethical. Otherwise, it's manipulative. Okay, so you have to use it consistently. And they're not doing that. And the reason they're not doing it is because that their theology is not allowing it. Because in some places, even if they were to use this restoration rule consistently, then actually it turns out that we would arrive at the same conclusion, namely that the Son is equal to the Father in divinity. So they have to avoid that. And the only way that they can do that is by introducing this rule, but then use it inconsistently and not use it consistently throughout their translation. Your mission is to show this to the Jehovah's Witness who is in front of them, to show them that this rule is not being applied consistently. It's to show them where is it applied and where is it broken. If you can do this, then you can stir up some doubt about the New World Translation, and that will also hopefully accomplish that they will doubt the organization and they will doubt the doctrines that they learn from it.
So are there any challenges that Christians would face when talking to JWs? And, you know, does this particular method that you outline in your article, will it help them with the challenges that they face? Because sometimes it, like, you know, we were saying earlier in the podcast, if you're not familiar with the New World Translation, it can be very confusing.
Yeah. Well, no, I think if a believer learns this, reads the article and learns how this works, I think that will strengthen their faith. They will understand how it works and they will understand why they can trust a regular Bible translation and why they cannot trust a New World Translation. And I think that's far better than just choosing not to know about what they believe and just when they come knocking at the door and then just shutting the door in their faces because you just don't want to hear about them. And then you can always go and wonder, well, could they be right in some of these accusations that they make? And they make very, very serious accusations about mainstream Christianity. They believe that we're all deceived and we're believing in a heresy that's just inherited. And if you care about what you believe in, which most of us do, then that is a very serious accusation. And the only way to get to the bottom of this is to know something about this. And I think that this is not just about Jehovah's Witnesses, but knowing this is also a foundation. It provides a foundation of how the Bible was written. I think it's necessary for Christians, for example, to know about the Tetragrammaton. A lot of Christians don't know that God has a divine name. Okay, who does this name refer to? Well, it refers to the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. The name Yahweh refers to the Father and the Son and the Spirit. I think this is fundamental knowledge that God actually has a name. It's also important when we run into Muslims, because in Islam, God has a name there. Their God has a name. He's called Allah. Our God is called Yahweh. How can they say that we believe in the same God? That's what they say. They claim that we believe in the same God. Well, why does he have a different name then? I'd like to know that. Well, no one has been able to give me a good answer yet. So I think this would provide a very good foundation of the original languages in the Bible. And I think that's important to know. So, yeah, I think it can only be an advantage to be equipped in this way.
Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid fire questions for Ziggy. So, Ziggy, what is your favorite meal?
Wow, my favorite meal. I love shrimps. I love salmon. Barbecued salmon. My dad does a tremendous job in barbecuing salmon and shrimp. And I also love Oriental cooking. And I do love a pasta, a very good pasta.
Are you an introvert or an extrovert?
I'm a combination. I'm both, really. I'm both. It depends on my mood.
And are you an early bird or a night owl?
I'm neither. I like to sleep in a little bit, and I also like to go to bed relatively, before 12.
And if you didn't have to sleep, what would you do with the extra time?
What would I do? What would I do if I didn't have to sleep? I guess maybe I'd read more.
And obviously, you're not from the United States. You have an accent. You live in Denmark. So what is one of your favorite things about living in Denmark?
Well, we have a wonderful welfare system and a very good social security net that takes care of a lot of people. So there's little inequality, social inequality in Denmark, and I very much appreciate that. And there's a lot of solidarity. And that's a very nice place to be, I think.
Well, thank you, Ziggy, for being on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Yeah, you're welcome. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast. It's brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. This has been episode 236 about Jehovah's Witnesses and the New World Translation. Our guest today, Ziggy Santini, has written an online exclusive article about the New World Translation, which you can read if you're a subscriber to our magazine. It's some of our online exclusive content, and you can read all of that content if you head on over to equip.org and see the articles tab. That's where you will find his article. And thank you. We'd like to connect to you, so please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man YouTube channel and join in the conversation in the comments section and in the live chat when we have premiere videos. Please follow the Bible Answer Man page on Facebook and on Twitter. You will find us at Hank Hanegraaff, Bible Answer Man, Christian Research Institute, and Christian Research Journal, as well as on Instagram at the Bible Answer Man account. You won't want to miss every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern when we live stream the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff at our website, equip.org. In addition, please subscribe to the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank gets out of the studio and into his study and engages in in-depth, free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. You'll want to head on over to equip.org because there you're going to find thousands of free resources for you in articles and past broadcasts, our podcasts, and videos. And thank you for all the ways in which you partner with the Christian Research Institute.